Hello everyone, this is Maz. If you're hearing this message, it means you're not part of the Voices of War subscriber community and will only hear the first half of the episode. If that's enough, then I'm thrilled. However, if you're looking to dive deeper into the complexities of war, please consider subscribing to our private feed by using the link at the top of the show notes. By doing so, you'll gain access to all of our episodes, the ability to ask follow-up questions, and we'll become part of an exclusive community that makes this show possible. I hope you'll make the decision to join us today.
When Recep Tayyip Erdogan came to power, he used a phrase which was very important. He said, democracy is like a tram. You get on it and you get off when you reach your own personal destination. The Turkish elections, it's not about democracy the way it is in Western world, but it is a choice between certain ways of life. One is Islamic, a bit authoritarian. The other one is people vying for democracy, human rights, rule of law. Now, 90% of TV broadcasting media, about 90% of the printed media, is controlled by the government side. The winners are, to a certain percent, Russia, to a certain percent, some Arab countries, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates. Financially, they're very much involved in Turkey. They're happy. Their businesses will continue as usual. Putin prefers Erdogan over an unknown new face. Those able to leave have started leaving.
My guest today is Hasan Aygün, who is a prominent Turkish security analyst with an extensive career in international relations, global security issues, and conflict management, both as a diplomat and later as a political advisor. Hasan spent years serving the Turkish Ministry of Foreign Affairs in various functions, including as vice consul, first secretary, head of mission, and consul general in several different countries, including Iraq, Italy, Serbia, Austria, Azerbaijan, and Saudi Arabia. He later became a senior political advisor for NATO, where over the years he provided advice to six different four-star generals. Hasan is currently an associate director at Strategia Worldwide, where he advises businesses, governments, and NGOs on complex risk management in conflict-affected regions, with a particular focus on the former Soviet states, the Middle East, Africa, and the broader Islamic world. Some of our long-time listeners might recognize Hasan's biography, as he appeared on the show all the way back in June of 2021. I have shared a link to that episode in the show notes, where you can hear more about Hasan's extensive background and experiences. Today, however, Hasan joins me to discuss the results of the recent Turkish elections and possible implications for the country, the region, and the rest of the world. Hasan, welcome back to the Voices of War. Hoş geldiniz.
Thank you very much. Hoş bulduk.
Great to see you. A lot has happened since the last time we spoke. Well, nearly exactly 2 years ago to the day. What have you been occupying your time with mainly since then?
Well, I enjoy part-time pension, but it doesn't keep me from focusing on what's happening around the world.
Yeah.
Of course, the Turkish elections have been very important for me and for the country because it's not about democracy the way it is in Western world, but it is a choice between certain ways of life. One is Islamic, a bit authoritarian. Mm. The other one is people vying for democracy, human rights, rule of law, more importantly. And everybody on the second group is trying to digest the results.
Yeah. And I think you've been in Turkey through both the, I guess, the election and the runoff, and of course to the lead up as well. Is that right?
That's right. I arrived in the country late in April. Right. So I voted myself, discussed the runoff preps and everything, and voted again for the second round. And now I'm trying to concentrate on what may happen, what this election will bring, both inside and outside, as you said, how it will affect neighboring countries. You mentioned Ukraine, Russia, but Arab countries are also in the screen, I should say.
Yeah, great. And I really like the fact that you set the context for the election really well, because that's ultimately my first question. You know, I wanted to ask you how you would summarize the overall, what your overall feel for the election is, but you really brought up two interesting dimensions. That is one, that it was a competition between those who view, who seek an Islamic Turkey or Turkey, and those who are progressive, secular, seeking better relations with the West, more open border policy, less traditionalist type views. Can you explore that a little bit more for those who are not familiar with the Turkish context, what that actually looks like inside Turkey?
Okay, yes. In 2002, for the first time in the Republic's history, we had a conservative, religion-oriented party, which started really promising in the beginning. They said they would affiliate themselves with the West, European Union, adopt the rule of law, get rid of archaic military dominance in the country. And of course, many people believed it. Many people wanted change because we had coalitions, we had issues with right and left. The PKK terrorism was around for almost 20 years by then. So people were ready for some changes. But the problem is Quran and Islamists have a different perspective. It is Islam as a religion and Quran as a book is more rigid. It has laws. It has white and black. Very small room for interpretation of the religion. So when Recep Tayyip Erdogan came to power, he used a phrase which was very important to remember even today. He said, democracy is like a tram. You get on it and you get off when you reach your own personal destination. So optimists said, no, this will work. In Turkey, such things happen. This is not certain Arab countries. This is Turkey. We are more civilized. Yet the other party had different objectives, and they were successful. Initially, economy was great. For some years, investment was coming in. It was stable. But then they approached the destination where they wanted to get off. So authoritarian rule was enforced. It was first put on a referendum. Did we want parliamentary system or presidential system? It was put with a nice coating, but it was clear that it would have been a one-man show, and it became a one-man show.
But it was clear for who? Because obviously the referendum passed, so it was obviously clear to a minority.
It was clear to a minority, you're right. Many liberals voted for rule of law that was as mentioned by Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his party, AK Party Justice Party. So many in the beginning had some hopes. We can do it. Yes, 98% of Turks are Muslim, so it may work. It was thought to bring some liberalization of outfits, Islamic outfits, for example. Many said, why not? If they believe in it, they can do it. But the intention was not to be liberal. It was the intention was to make everybody look like them. And it has been happening. Still, you can buy alcoholic beverage in Turkey, but it's about 300% tax. Many places are banned from selling it. So they're trying to change the way of life that we were used to. That's liberal, I should say. After 2012, 2013, things started to change. They became more authoritarian. They had issues within themselves. The Fethullah Gulen organization and AK Party broke apart. And AK Party prevailed. And Recep Tayyip Erdogan became more authoritarian. And in 2018, the presidential system was introduced. It was a referendum. full of stories. There was no transparency. There were lots of rigging, many would claim. And for the last 5 years, we've been experiencing presidential system, which makes us long for the parliamentary system of our party before 2018, 2017. So this election was an important test for those who were not happy with an Islamic-oriented rule and the liberal democratic ways they wanted to bring back. But it was not only the religion. Corruption, nepotism have reached incredible levels. Pressure, intimidation on social democrats, opposition, and liberal groups. Journalists or bloggers, podcasters like yourself, they were all threatened by the system. And the country is very clearly divided into two. And I'm afraid to say maybe into three. When you look at the election results, you see three different geographical areas.
Okay, it's interesting.
The coastal line from Adana-Syrian border up to Istanbul is social democrat, liberal, and they don't like the way of life introduced by the Islamists. The center of the country, apart from Ankara and Eskişehir, two provinces, is totally AK Party. Whatever happens, whatever hardships they have, they are devoted. It's like supporting a football team which can never become a champion. They say, well, things are not all right, but it's ours.
It's ours, better the devil you know,
Yes, it moved from being a political choice to a more fanatic, stronger group psychology. And the southeastern part of the country, they got well with the first group, the social democrats, but just in case, they have their own geography where they are dominant, and their emphasis is on Kurdish rights, Kurdish way of life, maybe self-rule. So it is fair to say that in this country, there are three really different groups, Two of them can come along. But when you put Islamists and others, they cannot come along. Right. They have to learn peaceful coexistence, and it is not here yet. So the elections was, as I said before, was something like a referendum. Do we want to continue or not? And the result is 52-48, but it's not a fair and just 48-52.
I think it's very clear to our audience that both of us undoubtedly, and I'm sure that's where the, you know, the way you voted, and certainly will be the way I would have voted in the 48%, right? So we just have to lay our bias out front. And I think you've stated as much right from the start. But the reason I want to lay that bias up front is because it's going to be very easy for us to be accused in this conversation, well, you're just sore losers and therefore, you know, you're making a complaint. So I put that out front because what we're going to talk about next is this notion about free and fair elections. I think what you were about to say is that, yes, we can tick the box that these were free elections. In other words, people could go and vote. Everybody was free to vote and encouraged to vote. But where the rubber really meets the road is the fair part. And I think that was what you emphasized in your last statement, that these were not fair elections. And I think this is what I really want to get into. This is where we start unpacking the progressive, gradual authoritarianism that has crept into Turkey since 2002, but through the shift to the presidential system, but also through things that you alluded to now, control of the media, silencing of the opposition, etc. So perhaps in my view, and I'm happy for you to lead the conversation, but one thing that I definitely want to talk about is something that's been made quite a lot of noise about even since last December, and that was the imprisonment of Istanbul's Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, who was, and correct me if I'm wrong at least, from the analysis that I've read, was a credible rival to Erdogan. He was very popular, charismatic, and really stood out as somebody who could challenge the iron grip that Erdogan was I guess, developing on the country. But of course, he was subsequently arrested and put in jail for dubious reasons. So perhaps you can give us a little bit of an understanding of that background to that affair and what that actually tells us about how Turkish politics are conducted at the moment.
Okay. As you described, the issue is democratic way of winning an election. Majority is majority, minority is minority. So minorities have to learn their place in the society. But without democracy, without human rights, without proper rule of law, this is a fight for survival. It became a fight for survival. I will give you some alarming figures later on. So the issue is that these elections was one way of going back to democracy or becoming more authoritarian, where all the opposing voices would be stopped one way or the other. And before everything, let's touch to İmamoğlu. İmamoğlu could have been the candidate, and Erdogan was afraid of him because he's charismatic. He's appealing to the people. He's from the same region, northeastern part of the country. So there was nothing against him that could be used. The only way to do it was find some legal instrument to shut him down. In 2019 municipal elections, Istanbul voters went to the polls twice. First time, they cast four votes into one envelope. And despite every effort, İmamoğlu won by a small margin. And the president said, I don't like it. He cannot win by a small margin. So three votes cast in the same envelope was considered as legal. One vote in the same envelope was considered wrong, rigged. Something went wrong. And they said, even if nothing went wrong, something went wrong. It's a very interesting Turkish phrase now. At that point, the election committee decided that one vote had to be renewed. And in the end, İmamoğlu won by a much larger margin, despite everything the government side tried. So İmamoğlu is the only person who scared Erdogan. And the legal excuse found was in 2019, during the break between the election and the runoff, İmamoğlu said, well, the decision is stupid. The decision to accept three votes out of the same envelope and canceling one is stupid. And this was the legal excuse. Insult of a government office was used as the sword of Damocles on his head. And that's why they start this legal process against him. And if he had won the elections before the decision, the legal decision was made, it would have been more difficult for Erdogan to get rid of it. But when he won, the next day, the very next day, the court decided that the sentence was legal. He's not still not in jail. It will take another 7 to 8 months for the process. There are two more appeal levels, let's say. So this was the first appeal level, and Erdogan won. Normally, of course, he's controlling every decision made at the courts. If you're a judge and you know he doesn't like your verdict, imagine what may happen.
Yeah,
and everything you can imagine happens, and even more. So, So İmamoğlu would have, if he doesn't go to jail, it is almost 100% certain that 5 years from now, İmamoğlu would run any candidate. Because Erdogan will not be able to run again a fourth time, he would have won. So this was to assure the future, not today. And more important, next year, Turkey will have the municipal elections. In 2019, 11 or out of 11 metropolitan areas were won by the CHP. The opposition. People, the Republican, the People's mm-hmm. Party, the opposition. Mm-hmm. Mm. So now he's concentrated on, or he's already concentrated on 2024, a repetition of the elections. And the maps tell me and everybody that whatever he does, the ruling party will lose again the same metropolitan areas.
This is what, when you say whatever he does, you mean whatever Erdogan does?
Rigging, yes. Whatever Erdogan does, he's bound to lose it. Unless he becomes with a magical wand and changes millions and millions of votes.
Just on İmamoğlu, though, just before we move off from him, because I think it was an important aspect that although he's not in jail, because of the sentencing or the criminal case against him for, and let's just double click on this, for basically insulting the government, right? So it's not that he actually
saying that what they did was stupid.
Yeah, so it's not even that he's done an actual criminal act apart from speaking his mind, which again is a huge part of this. And because of that, he was then banned from running in this election, in the presidential election, correct?
Well, the ruling side is trying really hard. On one occasion, İmamoğlu was visiting the grave of a former sultan, and he had his hands behind him. And someone called this an insult to a sultan who lived 500 years ago. And they went to court. It was so absurd. Even the court said, okay, we can never find an example of someone walking with his hands behind him insults the grave of a sultan. So they've been trying very hard to find something to link him with some sort of trouble and silencing him. So we have 7-8 more months until the final verdict, because it will go to humanitarian courts of Europe. So it will stand as the sword of Damocles upon İmamoğlu's head. They just want him to renounce his political future. So this is the pressure on him, because now Erdogan will need to come back to terms in terms of economy with the West. Erdogan has created an incredible problem knowingly, economically.
Why do you say knowingly? I think that's perhaps a useful point, because I did want to come back to that point about economy, because you did make the point that, you know, initially he was successful. You know, there was a lot of investment coming in 2002 onwards, and we know that he's turned Turkey. I mean, there's no question that Turkey prospered in those initial phases. But I think it's an important question to ask what he did to allow Turkey to prosper, and why that perhaps wasn't sustainable. Which is probably why Turkey is facing some of the problems, economic problems that it's facing now, with inflation 85%, I think, last year, if I'm correct.
That's right. Until 2012, 2013, he played by the rules of economy. He invited people with experience, and he listened to them. But afterwards, his political ambitions and his maybe lifestyle ambitions started getting him to a different position. Like something very simple that started happening 2 years ago. At one point, he said he was against interest rates, because in Islam, there is no interest rate. He said he would bring it down. The Turkish lira was sustainable at that time. It was around 5-6 liras to a dollar. It was going down, but at a slow rate. So he started bringing the interests down. By, of course, he was one-man show, and he ordered the governor of the central bank bring down the interest, and he said, "Aye, aye, sir." Three of them said no before, and they were all dismissed. So the fourth one said, "Okay, sir." And the immediate reaction was loss of trust in the system. So investments started going out, and people worried about their future in Turkey started buying hard currency. In Turkish banks right now, over 50% of the money is in US dollars or euros. More than 50%.
Wow. Wow.
And the result was a spiral, incredible inflation. 85% was official. But I can tell you from my personal experience, from last year, let's say start from 2 years ago when we last spoke, my dollars or euros lost about 60% against Turkish prices. My purchasing power is down by 50 to 60% in 2 years. What happened was his decisions, personal decisions, ruined the economy. To compensate, just before the elections, he's giving salary rises to the lowest level, to minimum wage. My Turkish pension from the Foreign Service was 4.5 minimum wage.
As in 4.5 times the minimum wage.
4.5 times the minimum wage. In July, it's going to be less than 2 times.
Yeah, wow.
It is bringing up the lower income earners. They are usually less educated, more conservative, and they are closer to Erdogan in terms of background. But it's pressuring the educated people, university graduates. So economy is in shambles. I said knowingly, first he started with this religious idea of getting rid of interest. But the second one, beginning of this year, he started spending money on welfare of his followers, lowest wage earners. I think it's over 120, 130 billion liras. That's more than something like 12, 13 billion dollars lost in these 5 months. The government is spending more than the taxes that are coming in. So right now the coffers are empty. They managed to get some swap system from Qatar and Saudi Arabia and of course Russia. So we have whatever we have, it's central bank safes are the money coming from those countries. So as of today, he's very happy. But how he is going to manage the economy is going to be incredibly difficult. The outgoing Minister of Finance said, well, we are giving you money, but we are going to get them back by new taxes. Economy will go down further. And the immediate reaction after the second round in the last 3 days was Turkish lira lost around 10% against the US dollar or euro.
That's the further investment moving away.
And people are losing their faith in the stability and health of the system. So if we go back to what happened, how did we get 52%? It was a long process. It was not only the election days. Erdogan has been cleverly investing on media. His followers, his close circle is buying media. For example, one group, Demirören, got a loan from Agriculture Bank, $750 million, to buy two media outlets. And he never paid back. It was all planned. Everything was planned. So now 90% of TV broadcasting media, about 90% of the printed media, is controlled by the government side. And it's sometimes strange and funny for us. You can buy 10 papers with the same headline, which is dictated by the information directorate of the president. They come up with the same catchphrases, which are appealing to the people who favor AK Party.
Yeah.
And the media that is still opposing is under pressure. Under intimidation.
Well, I think it's... I was just going to say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but Turkey ranks a second only after China in the number of imprisoned journalists. And I think we've seen that really spike post the so-called coup in 2016 or the attempted coup in 2016. But we did see a huge spike and the wide casting net of arrests capturing all of the intelligentsia, university deans, et cetera, who all allegedly had somehow links to Gülen in some way. But of course, it's very easy to make that mark against anyone and then throw them to jail and hope that they will, force them to prove their innocence. And I think that, of course, then transpired to journalists, right? And that's not something that's captured in our day-to-day discourse when we talk about Turkish politics, that journalists are silenced and imprisoned every single day.
And now podcasters and bloggers.
Right, so I shouldn't travel to Turkey.
Social media users. So just be careful.
No, I mean, but it's a very, we're laughing at it because of the absurdity, but it is a very, very serious and grave and dark reality of Turkish political landscape.
True. But many people, knowingly or unknowingly, step on someone's foot and they end up in jail and they have to prove their innocence. Mm. And there are some people who are not even allowed to prove their innocence because the president says so. You must have heard of Osman Kavala case, a philanthropist opposing the government at Gezi Park, Istanbul, 2013 sort of demonstrations or standoff between government forces and ordinary people. Now, he's been in jail for now almost 6 years, and there are no official incrimination against him. And the president said he's not coming out. Or the leader of the HDP, Demirtas, he's in jail, and the president promised that Demirtas would never get out of the jail before he dies himself. So these are signs. Maybe you can say he was emotional, but these are signs how he treats rule of law in his hands. He is the decision maker. There are cases when he was pressured by Germany and by the U.S. and he had to release certain prisoners. I say he released because there was no way of legal decision being made overnight. So biased media coverage, partial law, lack of transparency in everything. Pressure at media was in such a funny level, I should say. The Turkish state TV provided 82 minutes of propaganda to President Erdogan and about 47 seconds to the opposition.
Wow.
So it's ridiculous. Every news starts with him and ends with him. So even if there were some people who would reconsider their vote, had no access to opposition media, opposition TVs. And the state TVs have all sorts of programs. Unfortunately, the opposition TVs have only political programs. So maybe they are not attractive enough to those people who want entertainment. And they listen to the government-provided entertainment and news. It became to such a level that people could not see the opposition alive among them, and they had no clue what the opposition was arguing about. A very simple way of solving the problem. If they don't hear, they don't know. And if they don't know, they think this is the normal environment.
This is
how the elections were held. Yes, it was free, as you said. Everybody could vote. But it was absolutely not fair. Most of the observers or the chairperson at every poll station belong to the government side. So decisions taken were always challenged by the opposition, and the results were never really revealed properly. So the elections, how did they get 52%? In Turkey right now, there are between 8 and 13 million people born abroad, whether you call them immigrants or illegal aliens or refugees, depends on you. But this was a well-organized case. When I was working at NATO, when the Syrian crisis started, the Turkish government's first reaction was, we would not allow more than 100,000 inside the country, and we would invite NATO to take military action to seal the borders. But then the president had another idea. He allowed in everybody. If you're a refugee, that means there's a problem in your country. And refugees are not allowed to go back for holiday to their own countries. That means there's no problem. But in the Turkish case, Syrians can freely travel back and forth, especially at religious holidays, stay at their town for a few weeks, for a month, and come back as, again, refugees. So the idea was to create a new power base for the ruling party, because those Syrians were offered really good economic benefits.
Right.
They're not supposed to pay taxes. If they start businesses, and there are about 300,000 to 400,000 Syrian businesses in Turkey, private businesses, they don't pay taxes. Whereas the Turkish person who is doing the same job has to pay taxes. Education is free. Health services are free. There are rent subsidies. There are minimal wage subsidies for Syrians. And now,
but how does that benefit him? I mean, surely are they? Surely they can't vote as refugees.
That's the point. That's the point.
Right.
According to the government, well, the first thing is about in the 12 years that followed the first Syrian crisis, about 750,000 children from Syrian families are born in Turkey. So the government, apart from those old fringe benefits, started offering them citizenship. And according to the official figures, it's about 250,000.
Citizenships awarded.
Citizenships awarded, but there is never a clear figure. And according to the opposition, according to the number of votes given, especially in the border provinces, the figure is over 1.5 million. Because there is an easy way of calculating how many people live in a certain town. It's through the birth certificate system or death certificate system. You know how many live there. If in 3 years the population increases by 30%, 40% in certain towns, 50% in certain towns, that means this is imported citizens, imported voters. And since all of them know what may happen if an ultra-right Turkish party, who says, including the Social Democrats, they said, we will send you back. And the standards of living in Turkey is much higher than in Syria. And with citizenship, with the right not to pay taxes, they would vote for Erdogan. If I were in their shoes, I would have done maybe the same thing.
Of course, yeah.
So 52 to 48. The difference in vote was 2.6 billion. So that means 1.3 million could have made the
difference.
It's
already been covered by Syria.
And, and we have at least 1.6 million. Another issue was granting citizenship to those who would buy property in Turkey for $250,000. And the votes coming from United Arab Emirates or other Arab countries and even Iran and Ukraine, there were hundreds of thousands of people got citizenship through that system.
You said Ukraine, as in since the invasion last year?
It started before the invasion, figures were small. In Antalya, they have their schools. In Antalya, there were already maybe 20,000 to 25,000 people. Now they are about 400,000.
Oh, wow. Ukrainians. Wow.
And many of them, those who have access to money, bought an apartment, got the citizenship. They are dual citizens. So they are there, Russians as well.
Russia. I always knew that there's a large Russian population, and I was going to ask you about that, but I didn't realize there was a significant Ukrainian one as well.
Iran, Iraq, anybody in a troublesome country or African countries, they bought citizenship. And they were, of course, bound to vote for Erdogan, who provided them the opportunity. At the election day, things were calm on both cases. So people voted. But what happened was counting the votes. There was no transparency, objections. The elections committee never declared the findings of objections to some irregularities. Never. At the second round, the time allowed for objections was less than 36 hours. So they said, you have to make your objection. I will declare the results in 36 hours. Whether I decide your way or not is what I will decide on my own. And you will never know about the result.
And you have 36 hours to make your complaints.
To make your complaints and get a result. So the result had to come in that 36 hours. I was part of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in my earlier life for 2 years. And there was this election monitoring system. And I read their report. And there was also another report by European Council. And I had access to those reports. And they come with pages and pages of some shortcomings. Would they have affected the result in a great way? They never talk about figures. The opposition talks about the figures, but there were too many irregularities before the elections and during the elections. So fair, it was not fair. It was not a fair election. You had a very good question about how did Erdogan win the elections when the economy was terrible, hyperinflation, and we had in February an incredible earthquake, in fact, a series of earthquakes.
That's right,
Where, well, the official figure is just over 50,000, but the unofficial figure is close to 100,000 people died. And the reaction was incredibly slow. The military is trained for such cases. They were not allowed out of their barracks for almost 48 hours. So how come they win? The earthquake region provided an opportunity to the government. Things were so bad economically and immediately after the earthquake, they spread around the country. And their voters were replaced by Syrians and other nationalities. Yet, Erdogan focused on certain fear factors. Terrorism. Everybody but the ruling party is a terrorist. CHP is supporting, associating with terrorists. So he used terrorist word maybe a few hundred times a day. Religion. Scare the people. They said, well, they will turn all the mosques into barns if they win. So you're going to lose your religion. He even mentioned so many untrue events that people would go into the mosques with their shoes on and have some alcohol in the mosques. So he played the religion card. He denied all wrongdoing. Everything was organized by outside forces who were out to get him or opposition. Many among the voters for AK Party would claim that the inflation was because of the opposition, not because of economic
decisions. Not because of the ruling government.
Not because of the,
But if you're supporting the government and you hear this, I mean, your own natural biases will make you believe that because you want to believe it. So therefore you will, you know, and we see this, you know, as much in the West and other parts of the world as we see it in, you know, in Turkey or the US or anywhere else, right? Where the base of a particular autocratic leader believes the unbelievable because that's, you know, your bias towards it. And you will forgive even indiscretions that otherwise might taint a leader because you're so, you know, you've bought in to that idea and whoever the target of that particular leader's rage is, They're the evil guys. They're the bad ones, right? They're the swamp. They're the elite. They're the 1%. They're the, you know, call it whatever you want. They're the terrorists, right? It's very easy to swallow that narrative, you know, whole and complete as presented to you.
That's 100% correct. But one more item that was very important.
Mm-hmm.
LGBT.
Mm.
The argument by the president was that if the opposition would win, they would allow marriage to gay marriage, lesbian marriage, but also to animals. I have never heard of it.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And people would believe it or buy it.
Ah.
So his main idea was polarization.
Yeah.
Let's separate
us
our
them.
People.
Yeah. Yeah.
Us and them. Exactly. Mm,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Media control. Fake news. Fake videos.
Mm.
There is a famous video that went around. The president showed the video at his rallies. The opposition leader would speak at some place, and then he would be applauded by famous PKK terrorist leaders.
Mm.
And he was adamant about it. He said, "Well, yes, okay, it's Photoshop. We added it there. So what?" he said. And you reminded me about the effect of the laws against disinformation. So
yes.
there is a file right now against the president for fake videos, fake news. But I'm 100% sure nothing will happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So in this environment, they won the elections.
Yeah.
That brings us to the question.
If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and gain access to all of the episodes of The Voices of War, simply become a subscriber using the link in the show notes. As you know, I will not feature any ads on the show, which is made possible solely through the support of our subscribers. If you find value in the content, you can become one now.